Rashbat is an acronym of Reb Shmuel Betzalel. That was his name, Reb Shmuel Betzalel. And once, he hosted in his home what's known as a Chassidishe Fabrengen, a Chassidic gathering, where Chassidim came together, inspired each other, rebuked each other, said L'chaim, sung beautiful heartfelt melodies, which was customary and is customary by Chassidim. The Fabrengen was continuing late into the night, and the vodka and the L'chaim was there, but the farbison, which is the food that follows the L'chaim, was finishing. And the Rashbats did not want that the Fabrengen should come to an end. So he had a lamb in the yard of his home. So he asked that they should take the lamb and slaughter it. And so they did. And of course, a whole new dimension was introduced into the Fabrengen. And the Fabrengen continued all night. In the morning, his maidservant comes into the home. This was his ranch, and his ranch only had one animal. It was this lamb. She comes running into the home, and she says, "Reb Shmuel Betzalel, the lamb is gone. Thieves came and stole it and killed it. I don't know where the lamb is." Shmuel Betzalel says, "Let me tell you something. The lamb is not gone. It has not disappeared. It's here just as it was before. The only difference is that now it's making a different sound. Yesterday, its sound was meh, meh, meh. And today, its sound is Hashem Echad. Hashem is one." The Hainu, that is, Kesha Toiv HaMa'urivba, Mizbarin Me'ara, when the good that is intermingled in it, in what? In Klipas Naiga, is extracted and separated from the evil, V'goy V'rva'ayla V'nichvul B'kdusha, and it prevails and ascends to be absorbed in sanctity. That's when Klipas Naiga becomes included in the realm of Kedusha. Kigoin, for instance, Derech Mashal. By way of illustration, Ha'eichel Bishra Shmeine Detura, if one eats fat beef, V'shoyse Yayin Mevusam, and drinks spiced wine, L'harchiv Daite L'Hashem Ol Teirase, in order to broaden his mind for the service of Hashem and for his Teira, K'da Amar Rav, as Rava said in Mesechta Yuma, Daf Ayin Vava Medbeis, Chamra V'Reicha Chulu. Rava says, Chamra V'Reicha Pikchen, wine and fragrance make my mind more receptive. So this is an instance where one drinks spicy, tasty wine, and that allows his mind to be more receptive, to become more of a vehicle, to absorb divine wisdom. B'shvil k'dei l'kayim mitzvos einik Shabbos v'yomtov. He's eating fat beef and drinking spicy wine to fulfill the commandment to enjoy the Shabbos and the festivals. And part of the mitzvah of einik Shabbos, of enjoying and having the delightful Shabbos, is eating tasty food. So this human being is eating, indulging in something which is from the realm of Klipas Naiga. But what is his intention when he is using it? His intention is to use it as an instrument for divinity, to use it as a vehicle, as a medium for transcendence, for holiness, for godliness, for spirituality. Azai, so what occurs then? Nizbari chayis habasar v'hayayin shayin nishpa meklipas naiga. The vitality of the meat and the wine, which originated in Klipas Naiga, is extracted from the evil, va'ayla la'Hashem ka'ayla ka'karba, and ascends to Hashem like a burnt offering and sacrifice. Which, what was the concept of a sacrifice in the Beis Hamikdash? You took a physical animal, and it was slaughtered, and then its meat, part of its fat, its blood, was offered on the altar, on the Mizbeach, and was consumed, was culminated in the holy fire, the Eish HaMa'aracha, which burnt on the altar in the Beis HaMikdash. And that symbolized and demonstrated the ascent, the elevation of the energy of Klipas Naiga totally to the realm of the divine. So the Gemara says, Shulchanei shel Adam is like a mizbeach. Your dinette and your table and your dinette and your kitchen and your dining room is like a mizbeach, is an altar, where the same challenge and opportunity is offered to the human being. When he sits down to eat breakfast, lunch or dinner, and he is granted a delicious piece of steak with vegetables, wine, juice, etc. So his choice is how to deal with it. Either he can treat the klipas neiga in a way which will allow it to transcend beyond its shell parameters and to become part and parcel of the divine energy of existence. He has the ability to pierce through the layers, to go beyond the glittering veneer, which is in truth not glittering, but concealing and obscuring its true essence, and to make it an instrument to serve the true purpose of reality, the true ultimate absoluteness of existence, which is its godly energy and its godly intent. How does he do it? By eating this meat with the intention of using that energy which he receives from the meat as fuel to serve Hashem and to live a moral, godly, transcendental, holy, constructive life. What he is doing is he's taking energy that has been previously connected to the realm of Klipas Neiga and elevating it to the realm of Kedusha. And the Alter Rebbe continues, V'chein ha'aymer milsa d'b'dichasa. The same is true concerning speech. Previously, he gave an example of deed, of eating, which is one of the most common things that human beings engage in. Now he's giving another example. If someone makes a joke, a milsa d'b'dichasa means a humorous remark. Why does he do it? A humorous remark also has energy. Everything in the world has energy. Everything that exists has energy. On any level that it exists, whether on the concrete level, on a more conceptual level, on a more metaphysical level, everything has energy. A joke also has energy. So if it's a joke or a remark which is negative, which can harm another human being, which is, for example, gossip about another human being, it receives its energy from Shalosh Klipot HaTmeis. But if it's a humorous remark, which is not holy, it's not unholy, it's just a good, nice joke that you can get a good laugh from. This receives its energy from Klipot HaTmeis. So again, over here, it's man's choice. Either he will take this joke and penetrate its shell and realize its divine inner identity, its divine purposeness of being. So he takes the joke and allows it to embark on the journey of eternity. Or he takes the joke and lowers it to Shalosh Klipot HaTmeis. Or he allows the joke to remain Klipas Neig. And in both latter ways, he is mistreating it. So ha'aymer milsa d'b'dichas elefakeyach daiten, to sharpen his mind, ulesameyach liboy la'Hashem ol teirasei ulavidasei, and to make his heart rejoice in Hashem and his teira and his service, shetzrichim liyiz b'simcha, which have to be practiced joyfully, ukamay sha'aser Rava l'talmidav, as Rava was wont to do with his pupils. The Gemara tells the story in Psachim Daf Kuf Yud Zayin Amid Aleph that Rava would preface his discourses with a good joke, with a milsa d'b'dichasa, with a humorous remark, whereupon the Gemara says the students would become cheerful. Batchi Rabbana. Only then would Rava begin his discourse, and then the Gemara says the students sat in total awe and respect in front of Rava listening to his discourse. But the opening, the preface of the discourse was always a humorous remark. Why did he do it? in order that they should become more receptive and better able to understand the discourse. Everyone knows what a good joke does. A guy could come, giving a class or a lecture. He can talk for 2 hours, say the most beautiful things, but it doesn't penetrate. You say one good joke and you get a good laugh and everything changes. Suddenly it's a very interesting phenomenon. People's hearts open, their minds open. There is something about humor that allows the human being to become more receptive to ideas, albeit their serious ideas. So when Rava said this Milsa d'Bdichasa, what happened? The joke, the humorous remark, became an instrument that allowed his students to be more sensitive to the message that Rava was trying to convey to them. To become more open to a spiritual, godly dynamic. So the energy of the humorous remark became an instrument in service of Hashem. So what happens? The divine vitality that is at the core of Klipas Noege and has been previously obscured by the translucent shell of Klipas Noege has been extracted, has become conspicuous, has become to the fore, and Klipas Noege was now used in accordance with its true inner godly identity. And that is what has taken over it and it has been elevated to the realm of holiness. Would anyone like to ask anything? Claire? Yeah. Oh, you want to ask, yeah. Yeah, you go ahead. How long can the delay be between the time you say the joke and the time you actually give the class? I don't know. That you have to ask sociologists to understand how long a joke has an impact for you. Yeah. Yeah. That's connected to Rava's intention. By the way, over here you can ask the same question. You know, same jokes are frequently used by different speakers. So what happens if one speaker uses the joke for a divine purpose and another speaker uses the same joke for a negative purpose? So what happens to the energy of the joke? The same question, yeah? Okay, that's a good point. It should be emphasized this. In Klipas Noege being elevated to Kedusha, the Alter Rebbe is giving different examples in which these different examples are actually different methods through in which Klipas Noege is elevated to Kedusha. When you eat beef on Shabbos, the eating the beef is a mitzvah. So the beef itself is becoming a direct partner in the fulfillment of a mitzvah. When you're eating beef in the middle of the week, and it's just fueling you to later serve Hashem, the beef itself is not part of the mitzvah. But nevertheless, the common denominator in all these cases is that the Klipas Noege is transcending its own parameters. The animal, the beef, is transcending the parameters of an animal and is becoming connected to the realm of Kedusha. They tell the story, I used to tell you a vart. The Chassidim, they used to say a vart as follows. When you're sitting at a dinner table and there is a large, hot, delicious piece of beef in the bowl. So one has to be sensitive to the spiritual dynamic which is occurring at that moment. The beef on its own is Klipas Noege. You taking the fork and sticking it into the beef could metamorphosize the energy from Klipas Noege to Kedusha, or from Klipas Noege to Shalom Klipas Noege.
Okay. Wonderful questions. Why is the Alter Rebbe so obsessed with klipa? Klipa, klipa. Everything is about concealment. The Alter Rebbe is not obsessed with concealment. He's obsessed with revelation, openness, serenity. But to achieve a real state of clarity, uncloudedness, and serenity, one must know that the void of spirituality and holiness in our world and in our lives is only due to a husk. One always has to remember the place of darkness. It's a husk, it's a shell, nothing more. So don't let it paralyze you. Don't let it distort your vision of yourself, of life and of the world. Go a little bit beyond the husk that Alter Rebbe is saying, and you will discover so much light, so much beauty, so much splendor. Concerning your first question, you did not understand still the distinction between the klipos. What makes this neiga? What makes this klipos atmeis? And your question, what happens if you use kosher food to perform an aveira? So there seems to be over there an integration between klipos neiga and shalom klipos atmeis. Let me attempt to explain it perhaps in a clearer fashion. Everything we learned, everything existing possesses within a divine energy, a godly vitality which grants it life, being, existence, grants it design and content. Everything, in other words, has a divine identity, which is the true and essential nature of any given reality. But by the same token, everything consists of a klipa, which covers up this identity. The klipa attempts to serve as a substitute to the real identity of the reality that it's covering up. This is true about everyone and everything. A human being, for example, consists of these two parts. The inner soul, the inner identity, and the klipa, the shell. For example, let's take a simple example. Everyone knows that when you're very, very angry, you should not make any decisions. A real decision in your life, or any decision, you should not make when you're angry, when you're distressed. Why? Because at that moment, you're not in touch with your real desires. Your anger alienates you. Your stress estranges you from your real passions and feelings and wants and convictions. So you, at those moments, you may make a decision which you might later regret very deeply. So the anger and its consequences, in other words, can be called a klipa. They are a husk. They are a husk that isolate you from yourself. They cover up your true self. They don't allow you to experience your truer identity and your real desires and convictions. The same is true with every single object and phenomenon in time and in space. All consist of these two dynamics. They all have their soul, their godly identity and design, as well as their klipa, their concealing cover. To utilize something in accordance with its inner soul means to dedicate it to serve the Creator. To make it an instrument in holiness and goodness, allowing its inner essence to be realized. utilizing something in accordance with its klipa means using it for a hollow, purposeless, mundane goal, devoid of a deeper spirituality and transcendental energy. This constitutes a perversion of the particular thing you're dealing with. It's falling prey to its outer layer. Essentially, what man is doing then, he is ignoring, abusing, and defying its true nature and character. It is also abusing one's inner soul. The human being who utilizes something in the world in accordance with its klipa is also misusing his own soul. His own soul, his own soul energies are being utilized and becoming hostage to the klipa dynamic of the world rather to its true identity. It's taking the soul and using it for something which is alien to it, for something where it cannot find expression and realization, for something which will cover it up for a hollow and purposeless act. Now, within Klipa itself, there are two levels. In Klipa Snaiga, the shell is not so opaque, so you may penetrate it. Obviously, we are talking about penetrating in a conceptual sense, in a metaphysical term. You may penetrate it and reach its truth, its inner divine anatomy. The shell, being that it is of a translucent nature, does project some glimmer of its inner divinity and holiness. This is what Alter Rebbe means when he says that Klipas Neiga is a mixture of Tov and Ra. The Ra element is its egotistical and self-centered nature. The Tov element is the godliness that is expressed somewhat in the reality of Klipas Neiga, as he also discussed at the conclusion of chapter 1. In Shalish, Klipas Atmeis, however, the husk is extremely opaque, not allowing us to reveal and bring to the fore its inner divine energy. So we have no choice but to stay away from it. To have contact with it will be totally counterproductive for everyone and everything involved, because we cannot get beyond the klipa. This is generally the difference between forbidden substances and permitted substances. We'll soon learn in the continuation of the chapter that Alter Rebbe explains that Asur means tied and bound. Mutter means untied, unbound. A forbidden substance, its inner divine energy is bound by the shells, and therefore we must reject it. A permitted substance is from Klipas Neiga, so its inner energy is unbound. And this is why he says at the end of chapter 6, which we learned earlier, that every act of an avera, of a transgression, is shalish klipas atmeis. Because in this act, godliness has become totally concealed and repressed, to the extent that something is being done which is antithetical to his will. Versus a permitted act, he said in the beginning of our chapter, is Klipas Neiga, because this act can become a vehicle to express the harmony and the absoluteness of existence, the godliness and the unity of life. When one now uses a permitted object to perform an avera, let's say he uses money in a dishonest way, he consumes kosher food on Yom Kippur, or another prohibited time, whatever it may be, Chametz on Pesach, and so on and so forth. What he now did was, he degraded the object in discussion from a Klipas Neiga energy to a Shalish Klipas Atmeis energy. He distanced that thing from its own godly identity in the most powerful way, making it an instrument in the realization of an act which opposes Hashem and His will, where godly energy cannot be expressed and revealed. The same is justice he does to his own soul. when he does that Aveda. He uses his own soul energy to perpetuate the opaque identity of Shalosh Klipos HaTmeis. To perpetuate the illusion and a delusion of a world divorced and totally separated and from Hashem, totally self-centered and egotistical, where godliness is totally not revealed. And Alter Rebbe presents in this chapter two examples for these two types of klippas in the area of food, which we just learned, and soon he will also give the example of intimate relationships. When one eats food for a productive, purposeful goal, he has brought out the true nature and essence of the food. He allowed it to become conspicuously reunited with its own source and essence. He got in touch with the neshama of the food. He elevated it from klipas noiga to kedusha, namely, that instead of being a concealer of divinity, it now bespeaks the beauty and harmony of spirituality, which that is the definition of Kedusha, as discussed in chapter 6. So he now redefined the substance of the food that he dealt with from a Klipas Noiga reality to a Kedusha reality. When eating, however, for a destructive purpose, the food is degraded. It becomes now an instrument in the realization of an act where godliness and holiness cannot be expressed. That is Shalosh Klipos HaTmeis. Prior to that, it was in a state of Klipas Noiga. It lended itself to become an instrument in the realization of godliness, and simultaneously also lended itself to be used in counterways. That is the limbo state of Klipas Noiga. And it's the human choice, it's the human person's choice that he makes, which is going to define his perspective on the substance and will affect the very nature of the substance. Furthermore, Alter Rebbe will soon say, even if someone eats, not necessarily for a destructive or evil purpose, performing a transgression or a violation, then he certainly degrades to the Shalosh Klipos HaTmeis. Even if one eats in a gluttonous manner, the food is degraded because this is an act which does not express spirituality and godliness. And the food has become an instrument. In this act, it has become a tool for the execution of an act through which spirituality cannot be realized. So it's degraded from Klipas Noiga to Shalosh Klipos HaTmeis. This, the Alter Rebbe is saying, is really doing this misjustice to the food. A little sensitivity is required. Do not defy the soul of the world. Do not defy the soul of the food you're consuming. Do not rob it away from itself. It's not fear. The animal has a soul. The tree has a soul. The minerals have a soul. It's not fear to the animal you're eating. It's not fear to the fruits you're eating. Don't embrace the klipa of the food and reject its true identity. Recognize the divinity in the food, its transcendental nature, and use it in accordance with that. Allow it to liberate itself. Do not treat it like a piece of garbage. It's not a piece of garbage. But even when a human being does eat it in a negative and a gluttonous manner, and degradation, and thus he degrades the substance, the Alter Rebbe will soon say it's only temporarily. Because being that it's essentially from Klipas Noiga, so when the human being rededicates himself to spirituality, he now redefines the significance of the food that he consumed, thus sanctifying and elevating them. Not like something which is essentially from Shalosh Klipos HaTmeis, which can under normal circumstances never be elevated, as he will discuss in the continuation of this chapter. And this difference of eating affects also the identity of the eater. If he is expressing his soul, or if he is enslaving his soul to the klipa dynamic. If he eats in a purposeful manner, he now utilizes his soul to express soulness. So that's a liberating experience and a beautiful experience. If he ate in a clipidic fashion, he now used his soul and allowed it to fall prey to a veneer which isolates the soul from itself. And we see this practically. You know, you see when a person eats gluttonously, when a person just eats in a totally self-absorbing and self-indulgent manner, it puts him into a heavy mood. It desensitizes him to what he really cares about. It estranges him from his own spiritual self. You know, people that are really involved in personal spiritual growth recognize always the importance of eating in a productive and purposeful manner. For the moment, gluttony and self-indulgence might be very tempting, but it ultimately takes us away from ourselves. It weakens our motivations, our inner passions, our yearnings, and so forth. Why? Because in this act, he surrendered his soul to the klipa. So he went into isolation from himself. He allowed himself to be covered up. Eating, the Alter Rebbe says, for it to be healthy, from an emotional point of view, must be a product of the soul. It should never take on an autonomous role, divorced from the human soul. And this is important to retain in our minds, this concept, because this is perhaps one of the central themes of this chapter and also the following chapter. But there's another example he gives. The difference between klipas nega and shalosh klipas hatmeyas is extremely relevant in intimate relationships as well. Although this is the theme of the continuation of the chapter, I'll just mention it briefly as an introduction. There are intimate relations which are in the realm of shalosh klipas hatmeyas. Which means that if man is to live a healthy life, he must reject them. For example, engaging in a relationship outside of one's marriage and the like is an act and is connected to shalosh klipas hatmeyas absolutely. Which means it can never be an expression of the godliness and the beauty of intimacy. This is a perversion of the soul of intimacy in the most powerful way. It's a cover up on the inner beauty and energy of intimacy in an extreme way. The inner divine beauty and majesty which characterizes intimacy from the Jewish perspective, intimacy between a man and a woman, can never be realized in such an experience. One must reject it at shalosh klipas hatmeyas. But a relationship between a married man and woman that is something permitted. There are certain elements of it that are even a mitzvah. Here we have an example of the choice the human being has to make in dealing with klipas noiga. Either the couple can see the intimacy as an expression of an inner, harmonious, spiritual, loving energy, an expression of the neshama of intimacy, of love, of affection, of a spiritual and emotional bond, then all the elements of klipas noiga involved have been elevated to kedusha. They have returned to their true core. They bespeak their true essence. Now all the elements involved in their relationship, including those elements connected to klipas noiga, are now expressions of their inner beauty and divinity. Sometimes their relationship becomes divorced from a spiritual love. It's totally self-indulgent and corporal. Then it is a perpetuation of the klipa dynamic. It is robbing away a relationship from its true potential, from its true beauty, from its true majesty. And everything is degraded to the realm of shalosh klipas hatmeyas. Yes. Speak up, no?
You can see that differently. In other words, the Shoah's people that miss have so much power they can steal on God himself. They can steal on God himself. And also, and on the other hand, I imagine the Shoah's people that miss have a purpose.
Very good, very good. You're asking, how do the Sholos of Satmeis have the power to conceal the divine spark? How can they conceal their own creator? And Hashem created everything with a purpose. What is their purpose? So A, Hashem the creator has concealed the holy sparks within Sholos of Satmeis. He created the dynamic. And he created it with the purpose of having in our world some serious challenges to the spiritual integrity of the human being, with the purpose that man's inner integrity and spirituality should prevail. So when man does overcome it and not fall prey to it and reject it, its purpose has been realized. In other words, Hashem's purpose in the creation of Shalosh Klipos HaTmeis is indeed realized, but not within the Klipos themselves, but rather in their negation and abnegation. Hashem's purpose in their creation is not in they themselves becoming facilitators of divine energy. Rather, the object themselves, including the divine energy embedded within them, must be rejected. Their purpose is realized not through their sublimation, but through their rejection. In Klipas Naiga, the purpose is realized by them ascending to Kedusha, by them beginning to bespeak the divine truth. In Shalosh Klipos HaTmeis, their actual identity remains outside Kedusha, which means they never become bespeakers of the divine truth, but their purpose is realized within the human being who rejects them. In the previous metaphor we gave in the beginning of the class, you could say like this: this world is like a hide and go seek. Hashem has two hiding places in our world. In one you can find Him, in the other you can't. In Klipas Naiga, you search for Hashem until you discover Him. In our work and relationship, however, with Shalosh Klipos HaTmeis, we find God through ceasing to search for Him there. We find Him in the very endeavor of stopping the search and looking for Him elsewhere. The very discipline and readiness of staying away from Shalosh Klipos HaTmeis is an expression of the godly energy of existence, which has come about through Shalosh Klipos HaTmeis, albeit in a negative way. Yes? It will take two more questions, yeah? No. Does that mean that the energy of Shalosh Klipos HaTmeis can never be elevated, you're asking? No, but we'll learn about that next week in Mirtz Hashem. Yeah, what did you want to ask? Go ahead, yeah? Yes. That's a good shaila. There are so many things that are asur ba'achila, mutar ba'ana. You're not allowed to eat them, but you're allowed to derive benefit from them. A horse, you're not allowed to eat the meat of a horse, but of course you're allowed to ride a horse. You're allowed to sell it. Same is true with a donkey, a camel, many other forbidden animals which are forbidden for Jewish consumption. You can have ana from them. True, there are substances that are forbidden both in eating and in hana, asr b'achil and hana, like basr b'chalav, meat which is cooked with milk. But there are many things that are asr b'achil and mutar b'hana. So you're asking, if there's shalosh klipos hatmeis, how can you derive benefit from it? It's total klip, but you cannot reveal the godliness. It's a good question. It's an issue which is somewhat profound. There are several approaches that can be taken. I'll offer you here one of the explanations of the Rebbe concerning this issue very, very briefly. When you say that something is Sholosh Lipos Atmeyas, it's not an objective description of the object under all circumstances. You cannot define absolutely and unequivocally the state of a specific being, the state of a specific thing or object, without including its function, its environment, the circumstances involved, the observer. You cannot define an object only in a vacuum, independent of how it's perceived and internalized by its environment. This is a notion which is so prevalent in modern physics, where the observer affects in a very real way the nature of the object he's observing. The contact between the human being and the object creates a certain dynamic, a certain energy, which has very serious consequences. And the same is true also in spirituality, in the spirituality of the universe. We always have to take into consideration the time, this place, the nature of the human being involved in this object. And therefore, even if something is essentially from Sholosh Lipos Atmeyas, sometimes a certain type of contact with it creates an energy of Klipas Naiga, or creates a dynamic where the shells are not so obscuring and concealing, and they can be extracted and revealed. Only in those circumstances that the Torah prohibits, do we say it is Sholosh Lipos Atmeyas. When a Jew comes in contact with something, there is a marriage of energies, a marriage of perceptions. That marriage between the two elements creates a certain dynamic, creates a certain energy. When a Jew eats a donkey, eats the meat of a horse or of a donkey, that is Sholosh Lipos Atmeyas. That meat, that substance is Sholosh Lipos Atmeyas. It receives its energy from those opaque husks that obscure their inner divine identity. When a Jew rides on a donkey, when a Jew uses a horse or any other forbidden substance for food, for something which he is permitted to use it for, so this type of contact, the specific circumstances, the specific human being, the time and the space and the manner in which you use it, creates a marriage of energies, which is a dynamic that allows godliness to be revealed both in the act and in the object. And the Torah is the blueprint that reveals the reality of the world in a deeper way, telling us that this is forbidden, this is permitted, this is Sholosh Lipos Atmeyas, this is Klipas Naiga, this type of contact is forbidden, it's an energy of Sholosh Lipos Atmeyas, this type of contact is permitted because it's an energy of Klipas Naiga. Yes? What happens if you eat treifa food beheter, for example, to save someone's life, to save your own life? Someone who's ill is threatened by an illness and so forth, which is life-threatening. There's a lot of eat treifa food. But it's mutter, it's pikuach nafesh. So since it was mutter, the human being was given the ability to reveal godliness in the object and through this act, thus elevating the energy of this food to Kedusha. In other words, this type of contact under these circumstances create a dynamic where the shell does not conceal totally the energy. Just as by Klipas Naiga it doesn't here too. Yes? The Alter Rebbe says, "Kamaish Aser Rava leTalmidav." The Rava used to say a joke, and then he would begin his shiur. You're saying the Gemara says Rabba. You're the one who also asked me in chapter one. The Alter Rebbe says, "Amar Rabba kegoina nabeinini," and the Gersh and Brachas is Rava. But here it's converse. The Gemara in Pesachim Kofid Zayin Amid Bey says Rabba, and the Alter Rebbe says Rava. Alter Rebbe says that Rava used to say Milsad Abdichasa. So the answer is, you're right, but if you look in Rabbeinu Chananel in Psachim, in the printed Gemaras, It's taka kamaisha that Rabbi used to say most of the b'dichas. But you look in Rabbi Nachman Alam Sachem, the Gemara says Rava, and in other places as well, many other places. In the Gedukei Seferim, it says that in various meticulous Kisveyada manuscripts, the meticulous version is Rava. That's why the Alter Rebbe writes Rava. Yeah, that's right. There's an interesting story told. It was written in the letters by the in a letter by the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe about his own father. He said it was in the summer of 1866. It was a hot July day in the city, the small city in White Russia, which is the city of Lubavitch. The children of Rabbi Shmuel of Lubavitch, who was the fourth Lubavitch Rebbe, the son of the Tzemach Tzedek, the grandson of the Balatanya, were 5-year-old, were playing around in the garden. One was the 5-year-old Shalom Dov Ber, who was to succeed his father, the Rebbe Rashab, and his older brother, whose name was Zalman Aaron. They had just come home that day from Cheder, from Yeshiva, and they were playing around in the garden which adjoined their home. These young brothers, a lot of stories are told when they were children, they had a lot of interesting conversations between them about a variety of concepts. Since they grew up in the Rebbe's home, so they have seen a lot of interesting things in their lives, so they would play. You know, today children play house. So they would often play the Rebbe and Chassid phenomenon. So once, for example, it was made up that one of them should be a Rebbe and one of them should be a Chassid. So Zalman Aaron told his younger brother, the Rebbe Rashab, who was later to be a Rebbe, okay, you be the Rebbe and I'll be the Chassid. He said, no. He said, I'm not going to be a Rebbe. He said, a Rebbe is done our Einer. A Rebbe, there's only one in the world. I'm not playing Rebbe. Chassidim, there can be many. So you be the Rebbe. If you want to do it, you can do it. I'll be the Chassid. So what happened? He comes into him. And Chassid comes into the Rebbe. So you ask different questions. So he said, I'm going to ask you two questions. The Chassid, Rebbe Rashab, is going to ask. He was 5 and he was 6 or 7. Two questions. One is a question known as in Haskalah. One is a question in Avaida. Question in Haskalah means a question in Hasidic philosophy. Question in Avaida means a question concerning the work of refining your personality and your character in accordance with the divine will. So his question in Haskalah was, what is a Jew? What is a Jew? So his brother answered, a Jew is fire. So he says, if a Jew is fire, why, I'm touching you now, I should get burnt. He says, because you're also fire. And when fire touches fire, it doesn't get burnt. Then he asks him a shaila navoida. What was the shaila? He did something wrong. He made fun of a child in school. So he wants to know what he should do to rectify it. So immediately his older brother says, by davening tomorrow, you have to have extra concentration in the meaning of the words in Pirush HaMilos. He says, you're not a Rebbe. He says, why aren't you a Rebbe? So a Rebbe, before he gives advice, first he gives a sigh. He identifies with your problem. He says, you didn't give a sigh. Right away you had advice for me. He says, you're disqualified for a Rebbe. So they had different encounters and relationships. So they tell the story that once they were playing around in the garden, and a big, big argument broke out between them again. What is the meaning of being a Jew? So Zalman Aaron, the older brother, he was known as the Razai, he was older of a year by his brother, says that the definition of a Jew is that they are an understanding and wise people who can and do study the Torah, which is divine wisdom, both its exoteric laws and its esoteric laws, and they engage in prayer with unique devotion and meditation. That's what the significance of a Jew is, and that's what makes him different than any other creature on the face of the earth. So his brother says that's not a good answer, because that's good for those Jews who have good, healthy minds and good, healthy hearts, that are really wise and understanding people, and can engage in Torah study par excellence and in davening par excellence. And over here you see the difference. But what about all those Jews who are very simple? They don't have unique minds. They don't have extraordinary minds. It's very difficult for them to study a word in Torah. Can they understand the words of davening? Are they also Jewish? Is there any significance to their Jewishness? Or it's just that they're born to a Jewish mother and that's it? Is there anything about their character, about their identity, that makes them Jewish, that makes them unique? Who was it a heated argument when these brothers got into theological arguments? They were pretty heated. They had an older sister whose name was Dvara Leah. She was eavesdropping. And she heard this intense argument, so she went running into her father, who was the Rebbe Reb Shmuel, and said, there's a major argument. The kids can't decide what a Jew means. You better help them out. So the Rebbe says, let them come, call them in. I want to see them. He was sitting, he had under a large tree. He had a table and a tree. He would sit there on the other side of the garden. So they came over there. So the Rebbe listens to the argument. It was like almost a dentata, a court case. What do you have to say? What do you have to say? And then he tells the younger one, he says, call me in Bensiyan. Who is Bensiyan? Bensiyan was a servant in the Rebbe's home. He was a middle-aged Jew. He was a peasant. He was very, very simple. First of all, he read Hebrew with many, many mispronunciations. He simply couldn't read a page normally. I mean, he read the Amidrash when asked, Satnishke klepta, as they say, avartza avart. One word didn't stick to the other word. A. B, he didn't understand anything. He couldn't understand Hebrew. He had a very, very difficult mind, and nothing was being absorbed. Even the most simple prayers that every child knows their meaning, he could not understand. Learning Torah, forget about. But he was a loyal Jew. He was a God-fearing Jew. He was a very, very sincere human being. He had love in himself. He was refined. He was a loving person. He was a loyal person. He comes in. So in front of the two children, the Rebbe says, Bensiyan, tell me. Did you eat today? Yiddish, hast du gegessen? He's surprised. I mean, he says, yes, replied Bensiyan. He says, did you eat well? Hast gut gegessen? So you know how Jews are. What well? Well. Well, thank God, I ate. I didn't remain hungry. He says, tell me, why did you eat today? So he's looking at the Rebbe. He doesn't know what the Rebbe is getting at. But he's a loyal servant. He says, why did I eat? So that I may live. He says, but why live? So he says, to be a Jew and to do what Hashem wants. And he gives a sigh. The servant sighs. You may go, says the Rebbe. Now send me in the coachman. The Rebbe had been seeing the servant, and he had Ivan, who was the coachman. Ivan was a nice guy. He was not Jewish. He was a peasant. He was a very simple guy. He said things as they were. Elamai, Ivan grew up among Jews from his early childhood. He was the Shabbos guy, as they, you know, the guy who would turn on the lights and take off the tshalom, put on the tshalom. So he spoke a perfect Yiddish. So the Rebbe always communicated with him in Yiddish. When the coachman arrives, the Rebbe asks him, Ivan, did you eat today? Yes. Did you eat well? Of course, yes. Why did you eat? So that I may live. And why do you have to live? Just to take a swig of vodka, have a bite to eat, and that's it. And he smiles, and he's all happy with himself. So the Rebbe said, you can go. And then the Rebbe turned to his two children, Reb Shalom Dave Ber and Reb Zalman Aaron, and he says, Zeta Untershed, look at the difference. They both ate today. A physical person has to eat. They both ate. Why? Because they want to live. But why do they want to live? So in the depth of the consciousness of Bensiyan was to be a Jew and to do what Hashem wants. And he sighs afterwards. Because there's a sense of transcendence that characterizes his life. And he sighs because he knows that there's so much deeper to life. The other person, why do you want to live? To take a swig of vodka. To have good food. To enjoy good dinners. And he's even happy with it. That's what Alter Rebbe is saying here in Perek Zion. A person has to go beneath the shell, beneath the husk of corporeality that doesn't allow us to appreciate life on a deeper level. Have a good day and a wonderful week.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya each Sunday morning at Heichal Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or to receive the tapes weekly by mail, please call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076.